Do we have a speaker yet?
I knew you were going to say that. That's how David has been answering the phone for what, the past couple of weeks?
It's kind of funny. I didn't start off with this as my intention, but somewhere along the line, I decided I'm going to play a little experiment here. I'm going to see how long it takes for me to precondition Cinzia to that question. And finally, today, when you called, I didn't answer with that. Do you remember what you said first?
I said we had no speaker.
Right. So the experiment is complete. The answer is
you're trained, Cinzia.
I have trained Pavlov's dog, and it took less time than it took for the Israelis to go into the West Bank.
But anyway, that's not what we're talking about today.
Right.
What we're talking about today.
But the experiment is complete.
Yes, the experiment. Which goes to show you, repetition is conditioning. You just repeat until you condition, whether it's a dog or me. I'm not sure that that's very flattering for me. But anyway.
Like I said, I didn't start off with that, but I thought, I wonder, how many times will it take? Will we have a speaker before I complete the experiment? And so, well, we still don't have a speaker, and I preconditioned you as of this morning, so this afternoon, whatever. So there we go.
Well, anyway, let's start back in time. Let's start back in January. What did you think about what happened, the fact that McCarthy had to go 15 rounds or whatever it was? I mean, what was your impression?
It was I had mixed feelings on the whole thing. Having run against a deeply entrenched incumbent Republican in Pete Sessions in 2010, that side of me is kind of like, yeah, you know, if you can get some concessions out of those people, and if you have the balls to stick by it long enough to achieve that, then that's fantastic. That's great. I support it. And at the same time, some of the characters who were involved in the effort in January were pretty childish.
The thing that I don't understand, it was clear after the Republicans achieved a majority, a very slim majority. And this was clear by the end of November. So you had December. I had an entire month to work out an agreement. I don't know why it had to be out in the open. I don't know why it had to be on the floor of the House. I mean, in the end, McCarthy pretty much gave the rebels what they wanted. So why could he not do that behind closed doors?
Yeah, when they achieved the whatever concessions they wanted in January, and ever since, it's like, that's a great place to start. Why don't you hold to that?
It was McCarthy who did not hold up his end of the deal. So I know you don't like some of the characters, but
if he went back on his word, then the second that you remove him, Matt Gaetz should have turned right around and said, now listen, we were serious in January. We want what you said you were going to give us in January. Are you going to give this to us or not? If you'll give that to us, if you pledge again to give that to us right now here on the floor of the House in front of everybody, I'll nominate you for speaker and we'll give it back to you right now. We'll move forward, but you have to give us what you said you were going to, what we wanted. I think that would have been the best way all around. Because initially, when they removed Kevin McCarthy, he still wanted the speakership. He still wanted to be put back in as speaker. And then he finally withdrew because he saw that this is just going to turn into a great big circus. I don't want to be a part of this.
We can't underestimate the personal animosity between Gaetz and McCarthy. Now, we can sit here and we can say that's childish, which it is. They should be able to get over that. They are elected representative, but people are people. Let's face it, pretty much every politician is a prima donna. They're not exactly these shy people. It takes a certain amount of ego to run for office. I think the personal animosity really played a huge role because Kevin McCarthy took to Twitter and essentially dared Matt Gaetz to motion to vacate him. You know, bring it on, I believe that's what he tweeted. And then, of course, you know, Matt Gaetz at that moment, he kind of had to do something or lose face. I think if we look at it from the broader view, is this is just the fact that the Republican Party, it's a dysfunctional party. We can criticize the Democrats all we want. One thing is clear, they do have discipline. And this is something that the Republican Party simply doesn't have. And I think we've talked about it before. Anyway, McCarthy got removed. And then at first they tried Scalise, and then they tried Jordan three times. And again, this is what I don't understand. If they cannot get the votes in the conference, if they know going to the floor that they don't have a secure 217, why do they keep going to the floor and creating the spectacle?
I don't know if this is the U.S. House equivalent of Ted Cruz marching up on stage at the convention and just setting himself on fire. I don't know if this is just pedantic for the sake of pedantic malevolence, or what are we dealing with here? I'm not sure exactly. It's kind of hard to read this. They seem to be a lot of activists who are completely supportive of this, and it's more than concerning because there doesn't really seem to be a plan in place. What are we doing? What's the point here? What do we hope to achieve in this? It would just be nice if there were some plan apparent. If we could see, here's what the people who are pushing this, the Gaetz and his cohort, here's what they want to achieve. If they would come out and just say, if we heard every day from them, here's what we want, here's what we want, here's what we want. If you had these nine individuals who have put their names out there?
Well, since Jordan withdrew, yes, nine people have now entered the speaker's race.
If they were coming out and if they were saying, yeah, I would give these people this, I would concede this, I would concede that or the other. If there were some real discussions about, well, we disagree with you on that. No, I'm not going to give that. How about if we compromise? There's no compromise that's even being discussed here.
The hidden grammar of this whole fight. This whole fight is essentially the donor class versus the grassroots. And the donor class are the ones who have been in charge of the leadership, and they want their way, and they're not willing to give anything to the grassroots. And I think that there is a level of frustration that has been growing for years among activists, because, I mean, let's be honest about it, David. You said this. Throw a couple of bones. For example, I noticed that Donald's, who was one of the nine, he mentioned that as speaker, he would release the footage of the January 6th protest at the Capitol. I mean, that was part of the agreement that was done with McCarthy.
Right.
Why didn't McCarthy release that? Another part of the agreement was that McCarthy, he would do the regular order, that there would be the 12 funding bill, that we no longer have these last minute CRs. Well, why didn't you hold to that? My speculation is the donor class likes the CRs because that's a last minute. You got to vote for it. Otherwise, the government is going to shut down. We can't have that. And they're able to put in whatever they want. And it gets voted up and down. There's no discussion. There's no vetting. There's no amendment process. It's essentially you either vote for it or we're going to accuse you of shutting down the government. So I can see why the donor class want to continue to do that. And maybe that's what McCarthy was doing.
I don't know if this is exactly what everyone's referring to as the civil war within the Republican Party, but there's very much an unwillingness on the parts of these two groups to compromise, to give an inch at all. You know, I think that boils down to it starts with the donor class. This is our toy, and we're used to being able to have the candidates
yes.
come to us for their money and their marching orders, and then come to you with whatever they have to say in order to get you to come out and rah, 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 vote for them. And that's not working. And I mean, it's not just one position that's not working for.
So there were nine who came forward after.
Now, let me ask you a question. You're a little more familiar with these than I am with the names. Can you name three of those nine?
I can name all nine because I have them in front of me as a list.
All right. Let me see if I can name three of them. All right. So obviously there's Pete Sessions.
Yeah.
And there's Emmer, though I'm scarce to remember what his first name is. And then there's Byron Donalds, who just seems to be, I mean, desperate to be the Black Republican Speaker of the House. I mean, he's just like, it's like Donkey, the character from the Shrek movie. In the back, jumping up and down. Ooh, 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 me, pick me.
I think he's a freshman, right? Isn't he? I guess I can look it up.
If he's not, he's in his like second or third term. He's not been there very long.
He is a freshman. He just assumed office on January 21st, which, by the way, if you're a freshman, you're going straight to speakership. I mean, come on. And like you said, he was using his race to, hey, the Democrats have a black speaker or leader, so we could do the same and we can win the mythological black vote that is out there just waiting to vote for the GOP. Anyway, I'm going off.
Give me the list of the rest of those, because I can't name another one off the top of my head. And I mean, after you get past Jim Jordan, Steve Scalise, Kevin McCarthy, and those three I just named, it's like, what are you doing really?
Here are the nine. Tom Emmer, Mike Johnson, never heard of it. Byron Donalds, Kevin Earn, never heard of him.
Mm-mm.
Jack Bergman, never heard of him. Austin Scott, Pete Sessions, Gary Palmer, and then Mauser.
Is that Gary Palmer, the golfer?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, I've heard of a Gary Palmer. No, that's Gary Player. Excuse me. I'm putting two golfers together. Arnold Palmer and Gary Player. Never mind.
But anyway, out of all of this, I mean, obviously we know Session because he was our congressman here in Texas mm-hmm. for a long time, and Donalds and Emmer. But, and this is the thing that's very ironic, because I honestly thought that Pete Session would have a great shot. Now, I'm not a fan of Pete Session. You ran against him. So neither one of us are fans of Session, but I thought, you know, he was the chairman of the House Republican Committee. He would be great at raising money. And let's face it, that's really what made Kevin McCarthy so popular.
Right. That was one of the big keys for Kevin McCarthy. And I admitted that in our conversation, I think yesterday. I said, you know, Pete Sessions admittedly would be fantastic from that aspect as far as the members of the Congress go, because he is phenomenally popular with the donors.
Pete is that he's sort of an inoffensive character. He's not a firebrand. He's kind of neutral, mm-hmm. straddles the fence enough to
look, he does the kiss the baby thing better than anybody that I know.
Exactly.
He's really personable guy. He gets along with people. They like him.
I absolutely thought that he would have a good shot because, like we just said, he's very good at raising money. He's got a nice, not abrasive. And I really thought, well, maybe somebody like that can kind of get this conference together, but guess what? He was eliminated the first round of voting, which that really, really shocked me. I'm not sure what this conference is looking for. Eventually, they settled with Emmer, who is the, I guess he's like the whip. And again, he was presented to the world as this is who the GOP conference has selected as their candidate. And then immediately about 23 or 26 people came out and said, no, we're not going to vote for him. Which, again, goes back to my main beef here with this behavior. Why do you not negotiate behind closed door? Why announce anyone? I don't care whether mm-hmm. it's Jordan, Emmer, Donald Duck. I don't care. Why are you announcing it to the world that this is who the conference has selected when you know they don't have the votes to be able to win the speakership? This is what I don't understand.
And I get the idea that this is an opportunity to increase your profile and gain some name recognition and get your name out there. One of the big things in politics is always, what's my next job? They're always considering, what am I going to do next? Okay, I'll surrender you that. But there should be people in leadership in the Republican caucus, in the U.S. House, who at this stage, their entire purpose is to ensure that we don't just get a bunch of nincompoops barfing all over the conference's entire collective shirts and ties. At the end of all of this, we have to be able to come away from this. We've got an election coming up. You are going to be going before the people and asking them to allow us to retain this majority, allow us leadership, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when this is how we're collectively behaving, right now, when at this stage, it looks like we're about to nominate a three-ring circus all over again. And then here you've got Mitch McConnell, who's practically tripping over himself, messing himself in public, seemingly forgetting his lines.
No, having mini strokes in public. I mean, that's really what happened.
Yeah. There. I mean, here's the Republican Party talking about Joe Biden tripping going upstairs. There's all three political branches, people. You know, this is a real problem right now.
Yeah, it is a real problem. And the thing about it is, when this fight with Gaetz broke out, which took McCarthy out, and then you had the Scalise, and then Scalise had to drop out, and then you had Jordan. What has been the unanimous criticism of this is a clown show, that this makes Republicans look bad? So what do? They keep the clown show going by announcing Emmer only to have him drop out 2-3 hours later. Okay, guys, you're being criticized from all quarters of being a clown show. Can you just change your behavior? Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Go behind closed doors. Do your negotiation. And then once you reach the 217, then you present the name, whoever he or she may be. Mm-hmm. Now, earlier you were asking me, because you had the suspicion that this was the libertarians doing this, but among those who refuse to vote for Emmer, it's Keith Self. Now, I don't think Keith Self is a libertarian, is he?
No.
So you had names like...
I mean, he's very conservative and he's very in tune with the grassroots, but no, he's not libertarian.
So he's not libertarian. I mean, obviously you got MTG, you have Tom Massey, who is a libertarian. You have Chip Roy, which I wouldn't call him a libertarian. So it's not the libertarians. It's not the MAGA radicals. And I understand your criticism that you see certain characters like MTG and you're kind of like, do I want to be on the same page with her? Sometimes they're the only ones who actually bring on the fight. So got to go with who fights. Mm-hmm. Might not be your ideal candidate, but if the ideal candidate stands back and says, I'm not going to get involved, you kind of have to go in with the horse you're willing to go in.
Yeah.
I think the best thing to do is to just have a temporary, maybe I forgot the name of the gentleman that took over as temporary speaker, but just
McHenry, have interim.
Henry, yeah, interim, maybe have him go until the next election and see what happens. But whatever they decide to do, they need to stop announcing a candidate only to have that candidate fail. They need to stop that.
Yeah, I mean, you're turning, it's one of those situations of seizing defeat from the jaws of victory. This was never going to be a victory any which way you cut it, but you can at least minimize damage, and you can at least have somebody who's serving as speaker who is able to get budget passed and is able to at least hold hearings on things that you've pledged you're going to hold hearings on. Some of those may be just fodder for the grassroots and are never actually going to become any action. Oh, okay, fine. But you can at least have somebody who's doing that. I don't think that we're even doing that right now. It doesn't seem like.
I mean, you would think that they would be able to get together and all agree on 5 things to keep the government going, mm-hmm. and just give that very specific and limited power to McHenry. Now, let's wait until the 2024 election and see what happens. Mm-hmm. This is the result of years of not having discipline, not having a common vision, not having, it's all coming, you know, it's finally coming to the top. It's coming, it's becoming evident. It should be fairly easy to just come up. I mean, we're talking what, another year at the most? I mean, a year, year and a half, or whatever.
Well, we have the polls open right now for the constitutional amendment election in Texas from the legislative session. So 1 year from now, the polls are going to be open. We're going to be voting for the president of the United States 1 year from today.
Can't you put together a list of things that you can decide to do for the next year? Instead of acting like whoever you elect today is going to be the speaker forever and ever, as long as the GOP maintains a majority. Yeah. I mean, now there's someone who actually came up with, let me see if I can find that. I don't believe this, but I thought this was a tweet from Clandestine. I don't know who this account is. But anyway, it said the GOP are either incompetent or quietly exercising genius. I joked early on that the House should just keep holding votes all the way until January 2025 to ensure Congress can't send any more of our money to Ukraine or Israel. Can't fund World War III without a budget. Keep stalling. Well, I think it's more a question of incompetence than genius. What do you think?
I don't think that we have genius in the Republican Party in Washington. I don't see that. I have not seen that. You can make an argument that that was what was there with Newt Gingrich a quarter century ago. That has not been in place. We've not had capable response to the Democratic Party. Nancy Pelosi is nearing the end of her career. She is certainly not the same Nancy that she was 10 years ago. We have not had her entire tenure. We have not had a capable response to her as Speaker. Harry Reid ran circles around us when we controlled the House and he was the majority leader in the Senate. We never had a response to him in the House or the Senate. So no, I don't think that we have had since the beginning of the Bush administration, capable, impressive talent.
Yeah, I think Newt Gingrich was probably the last speaker that had, because after that it was Hasker, and he was more very low-key, just kind of kept. But yeah, I don't think it's a question of genius. I would love to think that it's a question of genius, but it just isn't. I think it's just a party that just does not have a unifying vision. This is the thing about the Democrats. They are unified in their mission to fundamentally change the United States. They want a different kind of country. Yeah. And also the Democrat leadership and donors are very, very good at. They're very good at throwing bones at the base, which might not agree with them on certain things, but they know how to spread the money. They know how to spread the wealth. Maybe you're a black pastor and you really, really have a hard time digesting this LGBT agenda, but we'll take care of you. We'll take care of you. Or maybe some constituency might not like something and it's like, oh, it's okay. We'll do affirmative action or diversity, or we'll do amnesty for immigrants. They find ways to at least give something to their base. When it comes to the GOP, they look at the base and it's like,
you have the right to vote.
Do you want the Democrats in charge?
Yeah, exactly. You must be in favor of Joe Biden. I mean,
that's how they operate.
Yeah, that's the typical. That's what we run into. You better GD vote for who I tell you that you're supposed to vote for.
I just wanted to ask one final question. Do you see this as an opportunity for Ron DeSantis to step in, or do you think it's best for him to stay away?
The concern I would have with him getting involved with this is he's from Florida. I would think it would be really difficult for him as governor from Byron Donald's state not to support Byron Donald.
Donald is a big supporter of Trump. Not only that, Donald has attacked DeSantis, tried to make something of that curriculum about slavery. Mm-hmm. I think it's perfectly understandable why DeSantis is not getting behind Donald. I'm just thinking, could this be an opportunity for him to show leadership, or is that just too dangerous?
Generally speaking, it's an opportunity to do that. It's a matter of, do the details of the situation defeat that? And I would not want to, as a candidate who's trying to, at this point, fend off Nikki Haley, I would rather not jump in on something and have it blow up in my face.
Yeah.
And I think that there's way too much opportunity given the circumstances. I mean, DeSantis already has that kind of sheen from some perspectives of being the establishment guy. If he goes in and he's like, hey, let's all work together, and he's coming at it from the establishment perspective, that's just going to make more difficult for him in presidential race.
I agree with you. I think it's just too fraught with problems. I mean, it could very easily blow up in his face. A reporter did ask him, is the lack of a speaker hurting the presidential candidates right now? And Ron DeSantis replied, I don't think it's hurting me because I represent the antidote to the chaos. We need someone to come to DC who's going to bring order to this chaos and who's finally going to deliver results. And that's what I will do. I think that's probably the best answer.
What he said sounds good. Don't know that that's achievable, but it sounds good. That's an answer.
I think that's a good answer to that question. I think it was a good way to flip it around and talk about his strength as someone who is a leader and someone who brings order. I think that was clever. For my part, not that I'm a huge fan of the Republican Party, although I usually end up supporting Republican candidates, I hope that they learn some lessons from this. I would like for some adults in the room to just say, look, guys, let's sit down. Let's work out a compromise. Let's not make any announcements until we finally have settled on someone that can get the 270.
There have to be an awful lot of adults in the room. And I think that unless you can go out there and either send out an email or make a speech or make a statement or write a letter or write an op-ed or whatever, all the above, unless you can go out there and say something that you're going to fundraise $10 million off of as a member of the House of Representatives, that's not going to happen. Unless you can do that, you need to be sowing the seeds of unity within the caucus.
At this point, whatever advantage Matt Gaetz, MTG, some of these rebels, whatever advantage they had in terms of putting their name out there, fundraising, pleasing their base, I think that advantage is starting to erode.
Well, and to that point, they need to recognize there's limited utility at this point. There's limited amount of what I'm going to gain from now until next year, basically right now, next year.
Just do the negotiating behind closed doors for the love of God. Don't give an opportunity for the Democrats to laugh at you and make fun of you and give more fodder to the media. Anyway, I think we've covered pretty much everything we wanted to discuss about the subject. Any prediction as to whether or not we're going to get a speaker?
No, I'll probably keep asking the question.
And I'm not going to answer it.
You don't have to answer it at this point. I've preconditioned you.
That was a sneaky experiment.
The experiment is done. You know, it was fun. It was funny, and it was a fun conclusion.
So it was great talking to you. Until next time.
You as well.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.